Last hour, you heard Trucker Randy Bishop right on this broadcast talk about the labor movement going on right now as far as the freedom to work legislation. Grant Travers County, amazingly enough, passed non-binding request to our state senator and our state representative and so on, the governor, to sign the Freedom to Work Act, which would allow labor to allow somebody who takes a job to not be forced to join a union as a condition of employment. Which basically, if you think about it, is a truly freedom to choose type law. It allows you to make the decisions on whether on what you want to do with your money and so forth. And what I love most about it, well, you're just trying to kill unions. No, you're not trying to kill unions. In right-to-work states, which is what that would effectively make Michigan become, you end up getting more. You end up getting more jobs, including more union jobs. Paul Kersey is with me right now from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. We're going to talk about that this hour with Paul. How you doing, sir?
Good morning.
Good morning to you. I appreciate you being here today.
Well, thank you.
Can you believe Grand Traverse County, of all places, passed that? Now, I talked with Randy last hour, and I made a valid point that a lot of people think of Traverse City when they think of Grand Traverse County, which has a very liberal base to it. But it's not that way in the whole county, obviously, as was shown last night.
Well, I think Grand Traverse County is an interesting test, and it's good to see that the Freedom to Work movement passed that test and passed it with room to spare. I think they had a 5-2 majority.
It wasn't an easy one either. In talking to Trucker Randy Bishop this morning, he said that when they walked in, three of the commissioners were of the mindset to just table the whole thing, not vote on it. Why do you, questions like, why do you have a county getting involved in a state issue? Why do you have why does this county need to be even discussing this? Why does this need to be brought up in this meeting? You know, trying to walk away from them. By the time it was over, they were convinced to go ahead and vote for it. So that's a heck of a turn.
Yeah, and the thing about it is Grand Traverse County is mainly a Republican Party, but it's not known as a firebrand conservative county. This is the home Governor Milliken. These are his old stomping grounds. So,
well, yeah, Traverse City itself, yeah. The county seat, is quite a bit liberal.
Yeah, it's a good win for them, and I think right to work, freedom to work. However, either phrase will do. As much as anything else, what we're trying to do is save the labor union movement from itself.
Now, explain that. I know people need to understand more on that one because there's still plenty of people driving by the studio thinking about throwing the middle finger up at me as I go by.
Well, I guess here's the way I'd put it, and forgive me. I'm a Detroit native, so my focus, my first thing I think of is going to be Metro Detroit. Just the other day, American Axle shut down in Detroit. They closed down their entire Detroit operation. Now, 3 or 4 years ago, they had 3,000 people working there. But the UAW called a very, very foolish strike. It was a lengthy strike against a company that was struggling economically, but they still insisted on calling it because it was ideological anger combined with economic ignorance. And as a result, about two-thirds or 9/10 of the staff at that plant was let go because the company didn't really need that excess production capacity. They could do their work just as well at other facilities around the country or in Mexico. And the UAW simply did not account for that. And now the company's gone ahead and shut down the entire facility. Those are 3,000 jobs that those people could use, obviously. 3,000 jobs that Detroit needed. But they simply did not account for what the reality was in the marketplace. They didn't see the problems with the main car companies that just about everybody else saw. Now you've got a union that is economically ignorant and politically radicalized, and it is in a position where it is the negotiator for thousands of men and women throughout the auto industry, throughout industries, throughout government even. This institution can do a great deal of damage, not just to the state, but to its own people. It needs to be held more accountable than it is, and the best mechanism we have is right to work. So we're trying to save the labor union movement from its own ideologically radicalized and economically incompetent leadership by introducing a new level of accountability for unions.
I think it sometimes goes even devious beyond that. I'm going to show you an example here in a second to get your thoughts on it. Weather of the O's right now, partly sunny at 80 today. Tonight, down to 60 tomorrow, 85 and sunny. Going on the water today, southwest winds will be 10 to 15 knots. Waves maybe about 1 to 3 by the time it gets over and finished. Current weather conditions throughout the region. Trout Lake is coming in at 59, Rudyard 55. In Cedar, it's 59. The Lansing also at 59 this morning as I continue my chat with Paul Kersey with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Paul, as my understanding, in having a lot of conversations with folks who worked at the Dura plant in Mansalona, which is not at the same level of Detroit, but had about 300 jobs, and they a year or two ago, they closed down. Mm-hmm. And basically what had happened is, as I understand it, the corporation went to the union and said, hey, we've got to have some concessions here. Can we get some labor concessions so we can keep this plant open? We're serious. We are going to have to close it. If we can't, something's got to be done. No, no, no. And the movement kept going to the rank and file and pressured enough people to vote no when the rank and file voted on this. And they all voted no. And the plant got up and shut down. And it's sitting there just an empty wreck, just like every other plant does when people leave. I mean, I'm sure if you walked through the buildings right now, you'd probably need a tetanus shot. So, I mean, you're sitting there being told, don't do this. Here's what we're going to have to do. We're not trying to threaten you, but here's some reality, pal. You better know, you ought to know this before you make your decision. And they made their decision, and they did what they were told. And I have been told anecdotally, I can't prove this, but I have been told that the labor leaders were told to stand firm, and they all have jobs right now in the Deep South working for other labor organizations. They kept their employment and moved on for holding things firm. And yet, what about the 300 people at rank and file that work there? Well, sorry, pals. Have a nice life.
Well, that's the other thing. You can't assume that workers actually benefit from having a labor union. One of the big arguments that the unions like to make is that this is necessary and it's only fair because people benefit from having unions around.
Well,
you can't
great
assume
example.
That people benefit.
Yeah, a great example of that is the Sherry Lohr situation. Yeah. I mean, for Pete's sake, they formed the union, and what benefits did they give the daycare workers when they made them unionize?
Well, again, look at your people in Mansalona, look at the people at American Axle in Detroit. Did those people benefit from union representation? No, they had their jobs basically taken away from them because the union acted recklessly. You can't assume that people benefit from having a union around. I know a lot of people want to think that way. I can't blame union officials for wanting to think that way, but it's just not that simple. You can't just say, bring in a union and say, through the magic of collective bargaining, everybody wins. It isn't that simple.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It depends on who's in charge and where their benefits are, which is why I come back and say Right to Work and the Freedom to Work Act in Michigan will benefit people who have unions, because it will force the unions to be accountable to the people. If I'm sitting there and I have the right to leave the union and I can still stay employed at that same company, well, you know what? If my union bosses better do what I want them to do. They better not support kooky political practices that I don't agree with. They better not sit there and throw money into some kind of fund that I'm not happy with. Mm-hmm. They better be accountable to me, or else I'm not going to be a part of their club.
That's exactly right. The other thing that Michigan needs to come to terms with is the role of government employee unions. And again, there's another great example of that down in Flint. Detroit News had an article on this just yesterday about how Flint has basically degenerated into almost the imagery they used was almost a Wild West situation. You know, for the population, you know, the ratio of police to population, Flint's police force is half the size of Detroit's. Just think about that. And a big chunk of the reason for that is because the police union down there refused to make concessions. So now you've got a city that's economically struggling, has a serious crime problem, and they were laying off police because the union refused to make concessions. And I think we need to ask ourselves, why are we putting police or government employee unions with that kind of power? Why are we putting ourselves in a position where they wield so much power over elected politicians, and where politicians have to go to them for permission to take steps that are necessary to preserve their own communities? Why are we doing this?
Well, that's a good question. Why are we?
Because we passed a law in the mid-60s called PERA, Public Employment Relations Act, that basically tried to fit government employee labor relations in the same template that we use for private sector labor relations without noticing any of the differences between for-profit companies and taxpayer-supported government.
I'm getting frustrated as I hear this. You know that.
we need to, you know, the entire labor law in this state, public sector, private sector, really needs to be reopened. And I think that you're seeing people that are doing that, and a big chunk of what, you know, obviously the decision by the Grand Traverse County Commission was a chunk of that. It's definitely a signal flare. People in this state are realizing that the unions are a big part of the problem here, and we need to rein them in.
Can that be done? I mean, is the freedom to work legislation have some real steam right now? It sounds like it's starting to, but in the end, what do you think is going to happen?
It's going to be a tough fight. There's no denying it. But a majority of people in Michigan do support the right to work principle. And I think it's very interesting. I think a lot of Michiganians have reached a point where as much as they tend to sympathize with workers and as much as they respect the union movement's history, I think they've reached a point where they say, you know what, if the unions lose some power in the state, that's not necessarily going to be the end of the world. It might even be a positive. I think a lot of people are looking at the union movement and asking, what kind of power does it have? What are they doing with that power? Do they really deserve the power? Should we allow them to keep it?
Do they really lose power, though? Paul, I heard you at the Michigan CPAC conference, and you were talking about the union representation actually gets stronger under these kind of rules. And I'd like to have you share that thought on it.
Well, here's the thing: you have to think about not just union representation. Well, here's what I said. What I said was that when you have a right to work state, the majority of workers will join the union voluntarily, and that is the case. But at the same time, what you've got is a different union structure. You've got a different union organization. You've got one that is much more accountable to workers. So what you do is you've empowered workers, and you've made union officials not necessarily weaker, but more accountable. You've got a check and a balance put on union officials. So they can't go off on these ideological jags. They have to listen to the concerns that the working men and women actually have. And that is the key. It isn't about, you know, we're not doing this because we want to punish union officials. We are doing this because we want them to be accountable for the actions that they take, and we want them to act to be in a position where they need to listen to the rank and file. That's all.
And they certainly, you know, you could certainly anecdotally look and see where there's tons of examples where it doesn't appear like they do that by any stretch.
No, I don't think you can. I don't think you can assume that anyway. Well, let's put it this way: one of the people I'm working with lately. I'm not going to give you a whole lot of the details.
Okay.
But the typical union is very much a top-down structure, mm-hmm. and the officials, even at the local level, are not going to are in a position where they're insulated. I've got a person that we're working with, and again, I can't tell you the details.
No, I understand.
Where the union official was misusing the grievance process in order to protect a friend of his, and the local charter really just didn't give the people in that plant the ability to restrain him to stop him from following that course of action. They're going to have to either amend the charter or they're going to have to actually kick that guy out of office because they don't have a mechanism in there to prevent him from misusing his office. That is not unheard of. That happens very often because you do not have checks or balances within the union institution itself in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it sounds like a private dictatorship of club, I guess.
Well, the other thing I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. The other thing is that typically union elections are very one-sided. There's an establishment sort of clique that will run the union. The recent election for the UAW presidency, there really was no serious challenge to Bob King. He was basically selected by an internal administrative group within the UAW hierarchy, presented to the convention as sort of a done deal, and they ratified what was going on. You don't have really the internal debate, the give and take in a union that is often presented. So what you have is a top-heavy, top-down structure, and we need to get to make those people accountable again.
Paul, is this the time? I mean, is it, you've got a question. I mean, part of this has got to be the economics of the state. It's went down to the bottom. It's staying at the bottom. And regardless of what, you know, I have a lot of people in Lansing, when I have them on the air, tell me, well, these new policies of the governor, they're making people look at Michigan. A lot of people are looking at Michigan. I don't believe that for a second. I think maybe they believe it, but I don't think it's gonna pan out to anything just yet. I mean, the fact that you got your budget that you got your budget done before July, that's gonna convince people to move jobs here? I don't think so.
Well, I'll play devil's advocate for the governor.
Please, because I do think
he is doing some valuable work.
I do too, but I just don't see this as bringing jobs just yet. I don't think they went far enough.
Well, no, I think that's the question. But they did make some positive steps, and they're steps in the right direction. They are, again, part of the reason why I think that there is room for right to work is because you are seeing the state reworking some of its labor law. The emergency manager law. Now we've got a situation where an emergency manager really can come in and redo the union collective bargaining agreement. That was a long overdue step, but it will do some real good because now you can have an emergency manager come in and actually straighten out a city and put it on a long-term financial position. Depending on what local government you're dealing with, employee costs can make up two-thirds, as much as 80% of the cost of government. You can't straighten out government finances in the state without looking at government employee unions. And that means looking at collective bargaining. We've got $5.7 billion imbalance between what benefits for health and retirement would be in the private sector and what they actually cost us for the same number of employees, the same wages in government. If we could take a bite out of that, we could be in a lot better shape. We could offer our people a lot of tax relief and make the state a lot more attractive just by going after that. I think the recent decision to end project labor agreements that came out a couple of days ago, that bill, last I checked, is still on the governor's desk. We're expecting him to sign it. When that's done, that's going to save a lot of communities money on construction. I also see some positives in the legislation that was passed to change the process for binding arbitration. When collective bargaining breaks down between cities or counties and police and fire unions, that gets submitted to binding arbitration. They actually did revise that law. Now the changes that they made were pretty watered down. I don't know if those are going to do a whole lot of good. But the fact is, they're at least looking at binding arbitration, and I think that the arbitrators had a bit of a shot fired across their bow there. We'll see whether they respect it. But the point is, we are looking at labor relations in the state. Everybody understands at this point, including the sort of your Republican establishment, that changes need to be made to labor relations in the state. The only question now is, how far are we really, really willing to go? Are we really willing to step up and change the whole nature of labor relations in the state so it's more productive, more cooperative, less antagonistic, and less centralized and locked up by unaccountable union officials who are free to just pursue whatever their ideological goals are going to be.
Weather on the O's time at WKT. Take a look at the numbers right now. We are expecting ourselves great high today, around 80 and partly sunny. Tonight, down around 60, some clouds, but it should be gone. But tomorrow should be totally sunny tomorrow, and a high of 85. On the big water, southwest winds 10 to 15. Waves, 1 to 2. Current weather conditions for as the temps go. Nominal waves at 59. Indian River at 56. Traverse City at 59. It's WKT today, the talk station. Talking to Paul Kersey of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Paul, you mentioned the emergency financial manager law. Boy, that has got labor unions just freaking, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did for a while, although last I've heard things have settled down a little bit. I think we're going to see a lot of resistance from the labor union movement. My understanding is that they are pushing recall petitions and for several state legislators and maybe even the governor. So we've got a tough fight on our hands, but the problem is it's a necessary fight. It's a necessary fight because we have to rein in a vested interest that, that we've given a lot of power, and now we're going to have to take that power back. And no, and in politics, it's very rare to see anybody give up power cheerfully.
And it's very rare to see somebody being willing to take it away for the good of others. And so, I mean, that's just not something we've seen either. So you've got to expect. I think this emergency financial manager law is probably the only way you're going to see this happen, at least wholesale, because of the fact that. How many legislators want to go back to their district and said, I did this, I did that, I pulled the plug on this union and that union. They don't want to face that music, and so you end up having to have somebody else be the bad guy.
Well, the downside from the emergency manager law, though, is that you've got to push a city all the way to the brink before it has any immediate effect. We need to change.
Yeah, but don't we have a ton of cities already at the edge of the brink at this point?
Yeah, but why do we need to wait until our cities are on the brink before we offer them some relief and offer them a way out of their financial problems? We need to make changes that will affect the whole process from the word go, so that healthy communities have a chance to stay healthy.
Well, I certainly won't argue that. I mean, we certainly don't want our next generation of cities going down. I mean, rumor has it, I think you and I talked about this before, that there's probably anywhere from 15 to 20 cities and a lot more school districts in the state that are right on the edge of brinking over, and it's just amazing some of them haven't already popped.
That sounds about right. I don't remember the exact figure, but, yeah, that sounds about right.
I realize that's not your major subject, but at the same point, I'm sure you've got an opinion. Why do you think, Paul, not that I want to see it, but that we haven't seen something like that already happen? I mean, we've heard for years that there's school districts right on the edge and cities right on the edge, and I think they're right when they're saying it, but yet somehow they find ways to hang on, and I've got to hand it to some of the, I guess, the powers that be. They're a lot more resilient than I give them credit for.
Well, you know, there's no way you can completely eliminate some discretion from this until checks literally start bouncing, and that's, you know, so that's sort of the situation where we're in. You had a governor that is very reluctant, and understandably so, to actually push the button in a lot of cases. I think the city of Detroit's a great example of that. If it were any other city in the state that had the level of fiscal problems and the poor record keeping that Detroit had, that probably would have pulled the trigger a long time ago, but because of the sensitivity about Detroit and its sort of its historical position in the city in the state, it's the biggest city and all the rest of that. There's a certain understandable reluctance to actually push that button.
Yeah, that bigger city thing really plays into it because, I mean, here Detroit, although it's dropped a lot from where it used to be, it's still market number 11 in the country. That puts us as one of the top 20 major markets in the nation. It makes Michigan seem to be a big deal. When people think of Michigan out of state, unless they've seen the Pure Michigan ads enough, mm-hmm. they think of Detroit. I mean, mm-hmm. they just do. And so,
well,
I mean, what do you have? Grand
yeah.
Rapids is second place at what market number? I think they're market 78. So that's a heck of a jump down.
Well, if there's a major concert, if there's a sporting event, if there's a news event, out of Michigan, odds are it's going to be out of Detroit. So it has that, there's that cultural and historical thing that comes into play there. And again, I just think that it's understandable, predictable, regrettable, but understandable and predictable that we'd be reluctant to actually appoint an EM for the city of Detroit.
Do you think that they're afraid that it's going to cause such a bad reputation and such a black eye? I would suspect that answer is yes for even, but I'd like to get your thought. But yet, if it is yes, Paul, I mean, the rest of the country already has to know that Detroit's had it. They've got to know that. They can't be so naive to think that the mess going on in Detroit is salvageable.
Well, I think that what is more of the concern is the historical and political ramifications just within the state of Michigan. I think just about everybody, certainly Governor Snyder and the people around him, are sophisticated enough to know that the Detroit's reputation is poor throughout the country. I think they're aware of that. I think it's the domestic political ramifications that are staying their hand there. Plus, you also have to understand, again, you've got some very powerful government employee unions, Detroit Police Officers Association, Detroit Fire, you know, the Detroit Fire Union, Detroit Federation of Teachers, a lot of very powerful unions down there that for better or worse, have tremendous resources at their disposal. And that's something that's also going to play into their considerations.
What difference does it make, though? I mean, they're not going to support Governor Snyder anyway.
Yeah, but there's opposing and then there's opposing. Snyder has to keep in mind that you've got a large city that is going to be very easy to it's going to be very easy for them to go in Detroit and sign and get petition signatures to have him removed, for instance. So if they want to be that motivated, that is something that he has to keep in mind, that the Detroit unions can go into that city, they can get that city to turn out against him, they can use that city as a base for petition gathering to have him removed. I'm not saying that they aren't going to oppose him already, but let's put it this way. I think that he needs to keep in mind, and he needs to pick his time, and he needs to be careful about just which fights he picks.
You know, it probably all goes back to, back to the beginning of the conversation, the Michigan Freedom to Work Act. If that comes into play, because that's going to take a vote of the people to codify, if that comes into play in the 2012 election, they're going to the politicized unions, the ones that are really heavily in the politic, which is many, but they're going to have a real tough time deciding where to pour their resources into. Do you pour it into a governor and state reps and so forth, or do you pour it into fighting freedom to work? I mean, I would agree with you that they can do either or, but I wonder if they've got the resources. I mean, to properly heavily attack both.
Well, yes, the resources you shouldn't underestimate. Michigan Education Association alone collects $65 million in agency fees and dues, and those are effectively taxpayer guaranteed. So don't underestimate the resources that, frankly, in a lot of cases, we've handed over to them.
Well, without fighting it, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say you're right on that. It takes somebody with a lot of guts to go after that stuff, and mm-hmm. we've not seen that up until now.
But we haven't been in the fiscal danger that we are now, where we have benefits that are so far out of balance that it's costing the state $5.7 billion every year. You really just there's no other way to get around it. There's no way you can address address what's happening in the state without addressing the unions. It's sort of like the walls are closing in.
So you feel
are
like
forced
this,
to take actions that you otherwise would hope to avoid.
So, Paul, you feel like this year it's going to happen, just a question of when and how and what form.
Well, yeah, I mean, I see the Snyder administration that is actually moving on these things, even if they're not going as far as it could or should. Remember that the state, again, getting to the government employee unions, that really are, at this point, really are the problem. Most of your union supporters, due payers, are actually government employees, and Michigan hasn't quite reached that point, but the government employee sector is growing, the private sector of unions is shrinking, and we need to address that problem. We need to look at what government employee unions are doing in this state, and we have tremendous leverage. We have tremendous flexibility here. We could conceivably abolish collective bargaining for government employees. That's the flexibility that we actually have. We can certainly put any limits that we feel need to be made. We can limit wages to the cost of the cost of living increases for the next decade. We can move employees away from defined benefit pensions and into defined contribution pensions and free up money that way and make sure that the cities are on a sound fiscal footing and that the benefits are sustainable. We can make bargaining optional. so that if unions come in with deals or make demands that simply are unfeasible, the city has the choice of saying, okay, we're going to just go directly to workers at this point. And so that, you know, situations like Flint, where you have a city that's in serious fiscal trouble and has a serious crime problem, can go to the police and say, look, we really do need these concessions, and we're not going to let you block them from being made. We're going to do what needs to be done here. We could do those things.
How would they do that? Would that be the business or the government entity calling a vote directly to the people that they work for them? Or
you could pass that through the legislature ordinarily, just like any other bill. PERA, the Public Employment Relations Act, is a regular bill of the legislature, and we could repeal it, replace it, reform it, rework it with regular legislative action. Now politically, that's tricky, but it could be done if we actually had Republican leadership that was willing to do it. One of the things that the right to work or freedom to work movement repeats a lot, and it's undeniably true, is that right now the only people who can stop right to work or any other labor reform, the only people who can really stop it, are Republicans. They've got the majorities. They've got the votes that are needed. So, you know, Democrats cannot stop these things on their own, and the unions cannot stop these things unless they get through to Republicans.
Going to be interesting to watch this one, no doubt. Let's check weather on the O's at WMKT at 8:50. Here's what you're looking at. Partly sunny conditions today. Daytime high of around 80 tonight. Down to 60 tomorrow, 85. And beautiful sunshine again. Southwest winds going to be 10 to 15. Make that on the big water. Waves, they'll be about 1 to 2. And your current weather conditions right now. Petoskey's coming in at 60. Traverse City at 59. Menominee 64 in the city. The Sioux's coming in at 57. Chatting with Paul Kersey right now for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy on WMKT. Paul, you talked about what you think will happen. Let's grab a call here this morning before I ask my next question, and that's you. You're on the air with Paul Kersey of the Mackinac Center. Good morning.
Hello. I'll try to be very quick. I've been on a new job 2 weeks today. It was hard to find it, and yesterday I was in training with a table full of people in the same position, about 8 of us. And I listened to the stories. So I was by far the oldest one, and these jobs are they're quite low paying, but a lot of responsibilities, a lot of legalities, a lot of liabilities, a lot of hard work. But these people are taking them, and I felt like I was sitting around real people. They had family members deployed. They had family members with special needs. Many were veterans. Some of the women had ex-husbands who were not stand up for child support. But they're out there willing to work at a very bad job for low pay, and we need real jobs. And if the Republicans are going to stand in our way, we'll take their scalps. And I wish you good luck, and we need a more common sense approach. You know, let us tax deduct our 401ks and IRAs. You know, it's our money anyway, and we'll save Social Security and do anything it takes to get this country right again. It's going to be hard, but it's got to start right now.
Something's got to happen, no doubt. Thanks for the call. Paul, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think it's a very simple choice that Michigan needs to make. Do we need union jobs, or do we need jobs? Do we need to have workers pay union dues, or do we need to have them be in a position where they can pay mortgages and heat and light bills and car payments? That's the question we need to ask. At this point, the union movement has, you know, whatever the union movement may represent, whatever good it may have done, whatever good it may do in the future for us, we have to ask about what is it doing to us right now. And right now, I think we are dealing with a union movement that is ideologically radicalized, economically incompetent. They're destroying jobs in this state. They are chasing away employers. And we need employers in this state. We need to bring in companies and put them in a position where they can succeed too and hire new people. Right to work is one thing that would have a tremendous effect on our ability to on our attractiveness to companies. It would make Michigan a magnet for jobs throughout the Great Lakes region, and that's the thing that we need right now. Right now, we don't need union jobs. We need jobs.
And we desperately need jobs. There's no argument on that one. It's got to start happening. You're listening to WKT. Paul Kersey is with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Paul, is this the year that it all starts happening? I mean, you've made inferences to that. It sure sounds like we may be heading that direction, that at least is the starting points of this.
You know, I'm reluctant to get into specific timelines. There's a lot of things that are just impossible to predict. But I do see that we've reached a tipping point where, you know, I think the foundation of a permanent right to work committee, Michigan Freedom to Work, is a significant step. We've got a governor who is looking at labor relations in the state. We've got a majority that is in the legislature that is willing to at least start trimming back union perks and prerogatives in this state. So we've reached a tipping point.
Yeah, we definitely have. And to live in historic and interesting times, that's the ancient Chinese proverb that I guess we're blessed and cursed to receive.
Put it that way, yes.
You definitely could. You wrote several articles on this, Paul. Where, how do we find those?
Well, you can check out our website, www.mackinaw. That's MACKINAC. Of course, your folks up there probably knew that.
Yep.
Mackinaw.org.
Sounds fair enough. We'll check it out. There's a lot to talk about. Just look up Paul Kersey on the website, and you'll be able to pretty quickly start catching up if you're unfamiliar with this topic. But, boy, if you've been listening here, you've got at least a decent idea what's going on. Paul, I appreciate it, my friend. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. Will you come back?
Certainly.
All right, sounds good. Take care. Have a great day.
All right,
Paul
bye.
Kersey.